It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
U.S. spy agency says as many as 31,000 Islamic State fighters in Iraq and Syria. U.S. marks the anniversary of September 2001 terror attacks. I'm Bill Michaels, reporting from Washington. U.S. intelligence says the Islamic State militant group has between 20,000 and 31,500 fighters on the ground in Iraq and Syria. A Central Intelligence Agency spokesman said Thursday, this is much higher than the previous estimate of 10,000. He says the new estimate reflects stronger recruitment by the Islamic State since June, following success on the battlefield and the declaration of a caliphate in Iraq and Syria. Earlier Thursday, ministers from 10 Gulf and Arab nations say they are committed to joining the United States in destroying Islamic State wherever it is, including Iraq and Syria. Solemn ceremonies marking the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks played out Thursday in New York, Washington, and a field in Pennsylvania as Americans paused to remember the nearly 3,000 victims of the deadliest attack on U.S. soil. President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle were joined by Vice President Joe Biden on the White House lawn for a moment of silence. The Oscar Pistorius trial was adjourned until today in South Africa after the judge absolved the star runner of all murder charges, but indicated he could still be found guilty of homicide.
I am of the view that the accused acted too hastily and used excessive force. It is clear that his conduct was negligent.
The judge ended Thursday's proceedings abruptly without issuing a formal verdict for Pistorius, who killed his girlfriend and model, Reva Steenkamp, at his home last year. This is VOA News. The European Union is poised to slap new economic sanctions on Russia for its role in the Ukraine crisis. The new measures restricting the access of Russian businesses and banks to Western capital markets also block key high-tech exports to Russia. They're set to take effect today. In Washington, U.S. President Barack Obama said new U.S. sanctions against Moscow will be unveiled today. The Kremlin announced it would retaliate immediately, but did not announce details. A ceasefire is holding in Ukraine's eastern region. In this report from Washington, VOA senior correspondent Andre Denesra spoke with former U.S. Ambassador Jack Matlock, a longtime expert on Russia, about the situation in Ukraine.
Senior Russian officials, including Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, have recently stated there is no military intervention from Russia. But the last U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union, Jack Matlock, disagrees.
Obviously, they're intervening. I think they would say, look, you guys intervene wherever you want to. You even invade, like the United States invaded Iraq, which had not attacked it, and we are essentially using the same methods.
Some experts have indicated that Russian President Vladimir Putin wants more than just to gain influence in that region, that he eventually wants to annex eastern Ukraine.
I don't think there is an intent to take it into adding to Russia. It would be a totally irrational intent. This is an economically depressed area.
Andre Dineshner of VOA News, Washington.
Every agency of the United States government has been victimized by cybercrime, according to a senior Federal Bureau of Investigation official. FBI Executive Assistant Director Robert Anderson testified Wednesday during a congressional hearing to examine cybersecurity, terrorism, and evolving threats against the American homeland. Anderson said since 2002, the FBI has seen an 80% increase in the number of computer hacking cases. And federal agencies have not been immune, but he requested to discuss the full details of the cyber attacks in a closed committee session. The FBI says online attacks have cost the United States money, ideas, and innovation. It says the attacks are perpetrated by spies, international crime syndicates, terrorists, and hacktivist groups. Hundreds of thousands of Catalan separatists in northeastern Spain, spurred by Scotland's independence movement, swarmed the streets of Barcelona Thursday, demanding a secession referendum. The demonstrations on Catalonia's National Day came as regional leader Artur Mas pushed forward with plans to hold a non-binding independence vote on November 9th. From Washington, I'm Bill Michaels.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Horn Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military is on high alert following Boko Haram threat.
Most of these claims are intended to be alarmist and to cause fear in the public, but we are not taking it lightly. We have firmed up and upgraded all the defense.
Major General Chris Olukolade is Nigeria's military spokesman. The United Nations says a refugee crisis is looming in Cameroon. Oscar Pistorius's verdict reading continues today, Friday. South Sudan opposition parties fired their chief negotiator at the Addis Ababa peace talks. And despite Ebola crisis, Liberia will hold a special senatorial election next month.
Why the Ebola is a very, very dangerous disease that has engulfed our country, the worst attack we could have would be to lose our democratic government based on civil liberty and the rule of law.
Jerome Kokoya is chairman of Liberia's National Elections Commission, and Zimbabwe introduces new revenue collection measures, including a tax on mobile phones. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's military spokesman says the army has been placed on high alert in the northern city of Maiduguri and its surrounding areas following reports that Boko Haram militants have taken over nearby towns and soon would attack the city. But Major General Chris Olukolade tells reporter Peter Clotty that the military is not dismissing the reports, despite what he said is an attempt by some people to create chaos.
Most of these claims are intended to be alarmist and to cause fear in the public. But we are not taking it lightly. We have firmed up and upgraded all the defense arrangements around Maiduguri city and the environs to ensure that terrorists and their allies don't find it easy to assault that town. It is interesting that the alert state in the town has been heightened among the security agencies as well as the community. There is a high degree of alertness at the moment, which we believe is sufficient to frustrate any such evil plan.
With regards to the high security alert that you said, does that mean that the military has increased its troop presence in Maiduguri and its environs?
Well, the security arrangement is not dependent entirely on the number of troops, but on many factors, some of which I shouldn't be disclosing. But that is not ruled out as well. We believe that the arrangement in totality and in concert with the entire populace is sufficient to frustrate that evil plan.
Some residents are expressing concern, and they are, as reports said, they are scared that this attack is imminent. What assurances will the military be giving such people who have been leaving the area following reports that the Boko Haram militants will be launching an attack in the city?
This is not the first time such alarmist information has been circulated, but this time around it has been heightened. We are not dismissing it entirely, and so the entire security system has prepared itself to ensure that it is not brought to pass. The people have no cause to fear, even while maintaining their already heightened level of vigilance. Let the vigilance not translate into fear, as the terrorists and their cohorts intend by spreading this kind of information.
Some critics have said that the military is losing the war to Boko Haram because of alleged areas they have captured.
Time will tell. We are definitely going to reverse. No portion of the territory of Nigeria will be considered to terrorists. We will do everything to reverse it and to not just degrade their efforts to terminate the activities in that part of Nigeria.
In terms of military equipment, how ready is the military about getting the needed equipment that will bolster, as they say, morale of your soldiers to combat this threat?
Well, apart from maximizing the use of what is available, on an incremental basis, we are improving our armament and the stock. And like we say, a number have arrived and they have been deployed. Apart from being deployed, so much more have been expected. And as they come in, we'll deploy them to the mission.
Major General Chris Olukolade is Nigeria's military spokesman. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. The United Nations Refugee Agency is warning that a food and humanitarian crisis is looming in Cameroon, where hundreds of thousands of people have taken refuge, fleeing violence in Nigeria and the Central African Republic. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
The representative of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Ndeye Ndugu Ndu, says people fleeing terrorist activities in Nigeria and carnage in the CAR are arriving in Cameroon in bad shape with wounds inflicted by Boko Haram and anti-Balaka militias.
The situation is creating a lot of problems for the host community and also for the government. The first priority is to find a solution for those who arrive in the bad health condition because they have a higher level of malnutrition and people are traumatized.
Some 150,000 people have taken refuge in Cameroon in the last 2 months. They join more than a quarter of a million refugees who escaped from the Central African Republic and Nigeria earlier this year. Ndeye says Cameroon is being thrown into crisis on many fronts, with severe pressure on dwindling resources to sustain the refugees.
There's around 60,000 refugees who have decided to live in the villages because they came also for many livestock. It means that you have a need in water, you have a need in health, the capacity for the health center and also for the school need to be increased.
In July, the government of Cameroon asked for international assistance to cope as the number of refugees had doubled since January. Jean-Pierre Nana is director of civil protection in the country's Ministry of Territorial Administration.
Au niveau des populations locales, un certain nombre de déplacés ont été enregistrés.
He says there is a serious humanitarian crisis, security, socio-economic and refugee management challenges. He says they need immediate solutions like the construction of toilets, hospitals, wells and the provision of planting seeds for both the refugees and their host communities. Cameroon has deployed its military to close and patrol the borders in the north, where Boko Haram attacks have been on the rise for a year. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The chairman of Liberia's National Elections Commission says he's been told by both houses of Liberia's legislature that next month's special senatorial election should be held as scheduled. Jerome Kokoya had written to the joint committee asking for a postponement of the October 9th election to December this year, saying his commission could not hold a free, fair, and credible election because of the ongoing deadly Ebola crisis. Liberian constitution mandates the holding of elections on the second Tuesday in October. Kokoya tells me that some legislators have expressed concern that not having the elections could create a constitutional crisis even bigger than Ebola.
We have decided that we must hold election. The question that they're working on is the technical side of it. The Committee on Judiciary for the House of Representatives, the Committee on Judiciary for the side of the Senate, that meeting. And we were told by the Speaker that by early next week, we're going to have some information from them with respect to the date. They too, like ourselves, want election to go on this year so as to avoid any serious complex constitutional issues come January. So with that, we agree that we're going to speed up, and then sometime next week, we hopefully should be publishing the final listing of candidates, and then we'll take up from there.
Mr. Chairman, you had asked for the election to be postponed, is that correct?
Yes, we did that, yes.
Could you tell me why you wanted the elections postponed?
Because it was impractical. It was not prudent to hold elections on the date on which it was originally scheduled. As election commission, we are not only required to just put ballot boxes around and people vote. We are required to conduct free, fair, and credible elections. That means people have to be free to make selections, to move around, engage their candidates, their supporters. We could not do all of those under this situation of fear, especially with the measures the government are putting to attack the Ebola virus.
Do you foresee any challenges for your commission having these elections?
Certainly, there will be. But the greater challenge is if we don't hold elections. I think that would be the source of a more complex issue than if we were to go for the election this year. But there will be challenges. For example, you will recall that we've already had our plane before the outbreak, and that is a major and unexpected interruption. So what is happening now with the suspension of flights and so forth, and most of our electoral materials, ballots and other kits that need to come in the country, have to be flown in here. So what aircraft is doing now, vendors are now increasing costs. So the first problem would be the cost. And if we were to hold elections now, as we anticipate we will, there will be need to revisit our messages, strategy of voter education, because we have to explain the messages out there to also educate people as to how they can conduct themselves during the process in view of the outbreak.
Mr. Chairman, in the wake of Ebola, what message do you want to give to the voters as you prepare to hold these elections?
You have to first make them to believe that while the Ebola is a very, very dangerous disease that has engulfed our country, the worst attack we could have would be to lose our democratic government based on civil liberty and the rule of law. So because of that, we ask central to keep strong in the midst of all these difficulties to go to the pool to the extent possible and then light the new Senate.
Jerome Kokoya is chairman of Liberia's National Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September the 12th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. A South African judge has begun a lengthy and dramatic ruling over the fate of runner Oscar Pistorius for shooting his girlfriend at his home last year. The hotly anticipated verdict follows a lengthy criminal trial. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the courthouse in Pretoria, South Africa.
Judge Thokozile Masipa stopped abruptly and inexplicably short Thursday, just moments before she was expected to rule on Oscar Pistorius's fate. In the hours before, she had systematically laid out the case against him for shooting dead his girlfriend last year, stripping away inessential details and essentially dismissing the graver murder charges against him. As she began the final option, the lesser charge of culpable homicide, she stopped.
I am of the view that the accused acted too hastily and used excessive force. It is clear that his conduct was negligent.
Then she said, I will have to stop there. The verdict will not be official until she formally pronounces it Friday, with Pistorius standing to hear it. The sudden stop is a fitting twist for a trial that has had more than its share of drama. 41 days of emotional testimony, mind-numbingly detailed technical evidence, and several buckets worth of tears from Pistorius. Pistorius rose to fame in 2012 for being the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics, but landed himself in the spotlight again after he killed his girlfriend at his home in Pretoria in early 2013. He says he mistook his girlfriend of 3 months, model Reva Steenkamp, for an intruder. The prosecution argued he meant to kill her, an argument that, ultimately, fell flat for Masipa.
The state clearly has not proved beyond reasonable doubt that the accused is guilty of premeditated murder. There are just not enough facts to support such a finding.
That was part of an hours-long legal analysis, read in Masipa's even-keeled style. It was by far the most she has spoken during this entire trial, which has been dominated by the almost theatrical legal posturing by prosecutor Harry Nell and Pistorius's defender, Barry Rue. Pistorius, in contrast to Masipa, was openly emotional for much of the proceedings Thursday. He sat stoically as Masipa began her account of the events of that night, but his shoulders began to droop as she spoke of Steenkamp's fatal injuries, and he began to weep. He continued to cry as she winnowed down both sides' arguments, cutting to what she said was the heart of this case.
The issues are limited to whether, at the time the accused shot and killed the deceased, he had the requisite intention, and if so, whether there was any premeditation.
The judge will finish reading her verdict on Friday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Pretoria, South Africa.
South Sudan's opposition political parties have dismissed SPLMDC leader Lam Akol Ajawin as the head of their delegation to the Addis Ababa peace talks. Party officials also dismissed Akol as chairman of the political parties forum, an umbrella group of all the country's parties. As Mugumi Davis Rakarinji reports from Juba, Lam Akol is calling his dismissal illegal.
The move against Akol comes just days after he criticized the government delegation for lacking political will at the negotiating table. Upon returning from Addis earlier this month, he accused government negotiators of trying to intimidate other stakeholders at the talks and said they should be more creative in finding a solution to the conflict. Government spokesman Michael Makwei Lewith, in turn, accused Akol of being disgruntled after IGAD reportedly failed to select him as the head of a proposed transitional government, choosing President Salva Kiir instead. Yesterday, Cabinet Affairs Minister and head of the South Sudan Democratic Forum Party, Martin Elia Lomoru, read a resolution approved by the 14 political parties.
We have officially dismissed Dr. Lam Akol Ajawin from representation of the political parties to the talks and as a head of the political parties delegation to Addis. And we should clarify, as we sit here, the chair of the political parties leadership forum is the president of the republic, who is also the head of the SPLM.
Akol is quoted in the Juba Monitor as referring to his dismissal as, in two quotes, illegal, and insisted he is still the head of the political party's delegation to the peace talks. Minority chief whip and SPLMDC official Andrew Okony Ayom says it is wrong for party officials to dismiss Akol.
It is a trick being made by the government to scare us, but we are not worried about it. They are being used unnecessarily just to block the negotiation.
Ayom says all of the minority political parties must come together and form a consensus.
We must be very keen to see that our country is not disintegrated the way it is now. So we are saying they should come together and also become a force to forge unity among the political parties.
SPLMDC yesterday held a meeting with its members to brief them on the progress of the talks. Afterward, Ayom told reporters both the government and rebels must agree to end the nearly nine-month-old conflict. Lomoru insists that Akol's dismissal is legal.
In conformity with the Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan and with reference to the Political Parties Act, we have made this decision. And this decision is binding. It's not subject to auditing by the mediators or anybody else.
Lomoru says they have submitted three names of lawmakers from other political parties to replace Lam Akol. The on-again-of-again peace talks were postponed late last month to allow parties to engage in further consultations. They are scheduled to resume negotiations within a few days' time. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Ruakarinj in Juba.
Zimbabwe's Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa on Thursday introduced new revenue collection measures and increased taxes on luxury goods such as vehicles to boost the country's cash-strapped coffers. Erwin Chifera of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
In his mid-term fiscal policy review, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa increased the excise duty on vehicles, saying the importation of vehicles was harming the local motor industry, which is operating at below 1%. 5% duty was introduced on airtime, and duty was also introduced on mobile handsets.
Telecommunications airtime, that is very recent data. Mr. Speaker, sir, as I've already mentioned, government faces a challenge to raise additional revenue to finance non-discretionary expenditures. I'm therefore proposing to levy excise duty of 5% on airtime for voice and data with effect from 15 September 2014.
Fuel prices are set to go up after the minister increased duty with effect from this month. Chinamasa said fringe benefits will now be taxed. Several top executives in both the private and public sectors get huge benefits, some bigger than their salaries, and these have not been taxed for years. These and other measures, Chinamasa said, would also boost state coffers as well as improve the local industry that has been adversely affected by imports. He said investors had shown a lot of interest in Zimbabwe. He said there is need for Harare to revise and clarify the country's controversial indigenization policy to lure these investors. Chinamasa said revenues collected for the first half of the year at $1.7 billion is below the projected $1.8 billion, adding 76% of this money is going towards employment costs, leaving little for operations. The finance minister said exports had gone down to $1.2 billion for the first half this year, compared to $1.5 billion last year. Imports stand at $3 billion compared to $3.9 billion the previous year. Chinamasa said, due to the non-performance of key sectors of the economy, such as mining, economic growth has been revised downwards from 6.1% to 3.1%. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Our time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with rugby. African champions South Africa engage France as Kenya tackle Japan at the start of the IRB Women's Sevens World Series qualifiers in Hong Kong, China, today, Friday. Drawn in Group A, South Africa will also face China and Mexico in the preliminaries, while Kenya encounters Argentina and Fiji. Brazil, Netherlands, Poland, and hosts Hong Kong are in Group C. The top four teams at this two-day event will qualify to join the seven core teams in the 2014-2015 IRB Women's Sevens Series. Turning to athletics, the curtains come down on the 2014 International Track and Field season when Africans host the IAAF Continental Cup in Marrakech, Morocco, starting tomorrow Saturday. The two-day contest features teams representing Asia, Europe, the Americas, and Africa competing in 40 men's and women's events. A total cash prize of US$3 million is up for grabs for athletes who excel. Elsewhere, defending champions Uganda, Eritrea, and Kenya carry Africa's hopes for glory at the World Mountain Running Championships in Cassette di Massa in northern Italy on Sunday. Turning to football, Zambia hosts Uganda in the opening leg of the penultimate round of the 2015 Africa Under 17 Championship qualifiers today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Angola hosts defending champions Ivory Coast. South Africa play Egypt, Gabon encounter Nigeria, and Mali play Tunisia, while on Sunday Guinea host Togo. Meanwhile, Ghana's Black Queens challenge their hosts and FIFA Women's World Cup champions Japan in a friendly match in Tendo tomorrow Saturday. South Africa welcome Botswana in Rustenburg on Sunday. Ghana and South Africa are preparing for the Telkom Namibia African Women's Championships next month. The event is also Africa's qualifier for the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup. Finally, in motorsports, the three-day KCB Safari Rally gets underway in Nairobi, Kenya today, Friday. It's the seventh event in the African Rally Championship Series. Drivers also earn more points from excelling at this event than in any of the other events in the series. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you on Monday. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The International Criminal Court on Thursday issued an arrest warrant for a Darfur rebel leader accused in a deadly 2007 attack on African Union peacekeepers. ICC judges said Sudan has not cooperated in sending 51-year-old Abdallah Banda to the Netherlands to face war crimes charges in November. And officials from the Nigerian city of Bama are refuting the government's claim troops recapture the city from Boko Haram militants. That's it for this Friday, September 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shrek, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
You love African music?
Music time in Africa. Wake, 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 wake,
wake. This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC. can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.